This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello everybody, this is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. And this is our first episode in 2018.
It Happy sure New is. Year, everybody. Happy New Year.
Yeah. And, you know, just getting through the Christmas season, we get through an annual event, which is the Christmas movie release. Well, lots of new movies coming out the past couple of months.
I love it.
Well, we like movies.
I love going to movies. You know, my mother used to ride taxis all over her little town she grew up in to go to the movies with her cousins. On Saturdays was a big day in my family because we owned a chain of ladies' clothing stores.
Right.
So Saturday was an important, busy business day for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother and I went to the movies.
So that was always just part of growing up for you.
Part of growing up in my family.
And, you know, we love movies. Now, we like different kinds of movies. I mean, I like historical films and documentaries and that kind of thing. You like more the
action, adventure, superheroes.
Yeah, you like those kind of things. So we're a little different on that. But anyway, you know, a couple of things kind of come into play in this. We both read, I mean, years ago, and I tell you, it's good reading. I highly recommend it. Francis Schaeffer wrote a book called Art and the Bible. And, you know, one of the keys to his philosophy was that all of creation and all of human endeavor is under the lordship of Christ, including art. And so we shouldn't be, you know, leery about saying, hey, art should glorify Christ. It should come from a biblical worldview. We shouldn't just consign that over and say, oh, it's irredeemable. And that includes the movie industry. And
yeah.
So,
well, you know, we need to see everything in our life through biblical lenses.
Right.
Now, you know, some people say that means that you should not look at anything that is not perfectly in line with the biblical worldview. Problem is, it's a fallen world, and we're sinners, and we're never perfectly aligned with the Word of God.
Well, you know, I got kind of a rubric, if you will. I got sort of a rule or an understanding from Schaeffer that I thought was really, really powerful, and it's very simple. He basically makes this point. He says that any work of art has two aspects to it. One of them is it good art? Does the artist know how to draw a straight line? Did the movie producer come up with a film that you can bear to watch? I mean, does the music make sense? I mean, there's art. There's the artistic skill and technique that's involved.
And the other part of it is there a good message? You know, the message is, what is the theme of the movie? What is the screenwriter, the director trying to teach you? What are they trying to get you to do?
What's being communicated here, the message of the film?
And ideally, it should be good art with a good message. But you know what? That's pretty rare.
Well, nothing's perfect. But there's a lot of things which have a very good, really have a good message that maybe never mention God, that never quote the Bible, and yet when you look at the actions and the words of the people, they line up very well with a biblical understanding.
Oh, yes.
And so we want to take this opportunity, because we actually ended up going to a bunch of fairly new releases over the past few weeks, and we posted some reviews on our website, on our blog, and if you're interested, come to our show page here at halandmelanie.com/radio, and you can see some links to our blog, raisingrealmen.com. But we want to just discuss some of these. I've been to a few. You've been to a few. Some we've both seen. And so we just want to kind of unfold these and give you a quick review of them.
And talk about some of the things you can talk about with your kids when you see these movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, because some of them are appropriate for your teens. Some are appropriate for younger kids, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you should always use watching something as engrossing as like a two-hour movie as an opportunity to talk to your kids and draw out, what is the theme? You know, what is the worldview of this? How should we think about this?
Well, and when you do that, you are teaching your young people to discern.
Yes.
And not to just be bowled over by the art. And that's the thing that you have to watch out for, because the experience of a well-made film, just like a really catchy song that maybe has atrocious lyrics, you know, you can be led down a path by the beauty of the art, if you're not also checking this against, well, what are they communicating in this? And so, okay. So there were four films that we saw, and I want to just kind of pick them all up in turn. What do you want to look at first? I mean,
well, why don't you talk about The Darkest Hour first?
Oh, okay. Darkest Hour. All right. Now, I got to say, disclaimer, I am a big-time fan of Winston Churchill. Okay, I have read thousands and thousands of pages about Churchill or written by Churchill, so I kind of feel like I know the man through words. And when I heard they were making this film, it's called Darkest Hour, the film just covers basically 1 month, May 1940, between the time that Winston Churchill finally was picked as the Prime Minister and when he gives that incredible speech in Parliament that, you know, we will fight them on the beaches and we will fight them on the landing fields. That, is, you know, it's just that 1 month.
Well, that was a transformative month for Britain because Churchill had been seen as a bit of a crackpot before that. Well, he'd been the one always crying out, you know, that Hitler was a danger, that Nazism was a danger to Britain. And people didn't want to hear it.
I think the upper class in Britain was so concerned about the rise of Bolshevism, the rise of Soviet Russia, that they were willing to kind of overlook some of the things that were happening under their noses in Germany. And there, you know, there's a lot of links between Germany and England historically. And so, you know, there was Churchill literally on the back bench in Parliament. He'd been kind of shoved to the side after some political reverses in the World War I and the early 20s. And so he's back there in obscurity gathering information. And he probably knew as well as anybody in the government really what was going on in Germany and why that should concern them. And then when Neville Chamberlain's whole policy of appeasement to Hitler and, you know, just try to jolly the dictator along and surely the lion won't eat another one, then when it all finally collapsed in on Chamberlain, Churchill was chosen, and he was not a popular candidate at all.
No.
So the movie follows him through this first month when everything is falling to bits. You know, the entire British army is trapped at Dunkirk, and they're about to be annihilated or captured. You know, the Germans have overrun France. France is crumbling away. The Low Countries have already capitulated. It's just like all of Europe is falling under this Nazi cloud, and they give this disaster to Churchill and, you know, basically say, well, do something with it. How does he handle this crisis? So I got to say, you can probably tell my voice, I really liked the film. I mean, I felt like they really captured the strengths and also the eccentricities of Churchill. A lot of the dialogue, I was very impressed because I went back to some of my history books and reviewed it. And a lot of the dialogue is straight from history. Even some of the side conversations are documented in different people's memoirs. So they did a really good job on the script writing. So I would say, okay, at least from a historical standpoint, I give it a pretty high rating. There is some complaint about a scene where he goes into the London Underground, rides the subway, the tube, and talks with some citizens. And there was some talk that maybe that wasn't, you know, that, well, near as they can tell, that's totally fabricated for the film. And yet, there was some contact with the common people, with the general public. And so, you know, I can almost give that a pass. So, I would say I give it really good ratings for the historicity and the characterization. The art of it, overall, I would say is very good. The filming is excellent. The costumes, you know, everything. I really, really thought they did a very good job presenting the story. Now, the message. What's the message out of this? Well, okay, I would say the message is basically, well, it's just a good recounting of history. What do you get from that? Well, one quick thing from Churchill is this proves that young, good-looking men aren't the only ones who make history.
That's for sure.
Churchill was 65, he was a crank, but yes. But he was a brilliant crank. And the thing of it was, he was courageous enough to stand on his own. And he had done that for decades in Parliament when everybody shouted him down, when everybody pushed him aside. He was not afraid to stand alone for his own career. And when it came time to stand up for the country, he said, Britain will stand alone against Nazism at whatever cost. And we will not go down until we are all dead.
And so we have a theme of never compromising with evil. and of sacrificing as necessary to fulfill your duty.
So I thought I thought it was a good message and a good film. So I gave this one 2 thumbs up, and I can't wait to see it again. I want to go watch them again.
Well, so what else have we seen this month? You know, one that I thought was absolutely breathtakingly brilliant was Murder on the Orient Express.
Okay, the Agatha Christie novel, and we both saw that separately, though. Oddly enough.
You know, the novel itself has some issues. You know, the ending is kind of ambiguous, and it's not very satisfying. You're left wondering, I'm not even sure what I would do. But yeah, that's a great opportunity for conversation with your kids.
Well, I got to say, it's very typical, in my reading, it's typical of Christie. Christie left some, you know, some open questions sometimes, and a lot of times, even the main characters, even the people you're supposed to be sympathetic to, are sometimes not very likable people. So I'm not the greatest Christie fan in the world. However, I like Trains, and I kind of like Hercule Poirot. He's another kind of oddball guy. But this was I thought it was my recollection of the story.
It was very true to the novel.
I haven't read the novel in so long. I can't recall all the details.
For me, it felt like stepping into the book. It just the book came alive. And I thought that all of the aesthetics were perfect. It gave you that sense of opulence that the Orient Express should.
Well, that's one of the great luxury trains of Europe.
Well, you know, even the napkin holders, the attention to detail was incredible. It was beautiful. It gave you that roaring 20s feel that it should.
Yeah.
And the cinematography was just breathtaking. Like, I don't know if you remember this scene where, won't spoil it.
Yeah.
Some of the characters are kind of framed in a boxcar. And the camera swoops up over them.
Right.
It is the cinematography is just brilliant. It's beautiful. It was satisfying. Yeah. And it was incredible. Incredibly true to the novel. I felt like it was one of the best movie adaptations of a book I've ever seen.
So artistically, high marks.
Jam up.
Very high marks.
Ultra high marks on art.
I really felt like the characterization of Poirot was good because it was every bit as eccentric, but at the same time, there was more subtlety to it.
More strength.
More strength to it than I got from reading it in the book.
And awesome mustaches.
Yeah, the mustaches are right. Okay. So artistically...
Artistry jam really up. Good. Okay. 5 out of 5.
What about the message, though? It's a good representation of a story which has some issues. And so without giving spoilers, what are some things that you might want to bring into this discussion?
I want to talk to my kids about vengeance. When it's appropriate to take vengeance and how it's appropriate to take vengeance. You know, that in, it would have been a story written by someone who had a very self-consciously Christian worldview.
Right.
Would have ended differently.
And I'm not sure how they would write themselves out of the corner that Agatha Christie created.
Well, but it would have been ways.
I agree with that. That it would have ended differently if this was a consciously Christian worldview underlying it.
And so, you know, I think it's a good idea to talk with our kids and say, you know, there was a right to be righteously angry in this situation.
Yeah.
But is there a way that it could have been handled such that it would have been a godly way to handle it? And I think there would have been a way to handle the situation that was a godly way.
Right.
But clearly it wasn't. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that these complex questions are really good to talk to your teens, especially your older teens about, because life is not simple.
And there are ethical questions that sometimes you have to really puzzle through. You can't just give a pat answer to.
And so I think discussing those things with our kids and arguing about it, this is a good one because there's not a clear answer. And so you can argue about it. You can discuss it pretty thoroughly.
Yeah.
And.
The story doesn't really end.
No.
You get to a point, there's a summation, but it's not really the end. It's very obviously something's going to happen next, but you don't know.
Well, thought that it was really, I'm going to try really hard to do this without a spoiler.
Right.
That as the train left.
Yes.
And you saw each character in the window.
Uh-huh.
They were each separate and they looked trapped.
That's a good,
And took their punishment with them.
That's good art in that too.
See, it was awesome art. Yeah. Okay. The art was just fantastic in this movie.
Okay. So we would say very good art. What about the message?
Mixed message.
Kind of mixed message. A lot of discussion necessary, although the discussion can be a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I tell you what, can we take a moment here and say thanks to our sponsor?
Let's do.
Because I tell you what, we are very thankful to all the good people at schoolhouseteachers.com for all the support that they have given to making biblical family life practical, and the practical support they give to you for making a biblical worldview present in your child's education. I mean, I tell you what, they have got so many good resources out there. You go to schoolhouseteachers.com for one low monthly price. How often do you hear that? But it's true. One low monthly price, your entire family can be taking classes from this huge and growing catalog they've got.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, they can be a lifesaver if you're busy, if you are teaching multiple grades, if you've got subjects that, golly, I just can't learn French to teach my high schooler. Well, you know, you can find these kind of resources out at schoolhouseteachers.com. And if you come to our show page, halandmelanie.com/radio, we've got a link right there that'll take you in and will also help our ministry as well.
Yeah, schoolhouseteachers.com is awesome. So much there. It's super easy to use and it's one cheap price for the whole family every month. Mm-hmm. It's really worth it. And please, thank them for supporting our podcast. We so appreciate it. So we got a couple of other movies we saw this month. So we
got a couple of others. All right. Now, the super big, humongous, galactic-shaking blockbuster that everybody has been waiting for is the one that you saw and I didn't.
Okay.
So let's talk about...
The Last Jedi.
You know what? I don't think it's the last movie, though.
No, it's not. You know what? I have such mixed feelings about it because you got to understand, I saw Star Wars in the theater when it was first released, first movie.
I saw it three times.
I think I probably saw it 12.
Okay.
I mean, I saw it a bunch. I could have quoted it by heart.
All right.
Loved that thing. And loved the two original sequels.
Okay.
You know, The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Loved them.
Now officially 4, 5, and 6. Right. Okay, got it. Yeah.
We're not going to talk about 1, 2, and 3.
We're not going to? Okay.
No.
Good.
Just.
I didn't see those, so I'm not going to argue.
You didn't miss much.
So Last Jedi.
Well, first,
mm-hmm.
It was tons better than The Force Awakens. The Force Awakens is number 7.
Okay.
The new one is number 8.
Mm-hmm.
It was tons better than number 7. Number 7, it's like.
That was like number 4 again, wasn't it?
It was number 4 again. They just.
Yeah.
They needed they saved money by not buying a new script.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Force Awakens was tons better than that. It uh-huh. had some really fun moments. The problem is that as our culture has deteriorated,
okay,
Star Wars has gone right along with it, that even from the beginning, the Force was a kind of pagan religion with a Taoistic...
Yeah, very Taoistic. Yeah.
You know, it's good and it's bad and it's the same thing. And this is very antithetical to Christianity.
Right.
This movie takes it even further
mm-hmm.
in that there's not a lot of delineation between the good and the bad.
Oh, really?
You know, and, you know, at one point, Rey
mm-hmm.
basically jumps into the bad and has no real consequences. And I really hated that.
So you've got the main character is shifting between the good side and the dark side.
Right.
Yeah,
and
okay,
so, you know, it's more problematic. It needs more discussion with your kids.
Okay.
In fact, I think that kids should probably be teens before they watch the whole Star Wars saga. I know a lot of people disagree with me, but it's so addictive. You know, the story is so enveloping and there's so much story there.
Well, there's so much in the culture to sweep you in with it.
It's easy to become obsessed about it and not realize the philosophical problems and the religious problems of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's that. It had some ridiculous moments.
Okay.
I cannot understand what they were thinking with Leia's big scene It was Mary Poppins. It was stupid.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And wow. I can't understand what they were thinking. That was a really bad decision. I can't understand what they were thinking in some other parts.
Uh-huh.
Other parts were epic and exciting and fun and wonderful. The themes overall were pretty good.
Okay.
You know, some of the themes you see is While I Breathe, I Hope.
Okay.
You know, great things can come from a small beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
It only takes a few to change the world.
Okay.
Obedience is better than sacrifice. Yeah, there are some really good
That's
things.
That's biblical.
Yeah, there's some really good things.
Okay.
Themes. But there are a lot of issues, too, that you're just going to have to really discuss with your kids. You're going to have to look at, you know... You have to look at the whole character of Luke Skywalker in this movie. You're going to have to look at the Taoistic ideas of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to look at... One thing I'm going to try to put a blog post up later this week about is the shifting balance of men and women. It was nearly all women in this film.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to post a blog post. I've got about half written later this week about it.
Mm-hmm.
But... It requires
very mixed, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun and better than A Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. It was fun, but needs a lot of discussion.
Well, and I tell you what, I guess I can say this as somebody from the original Star Wars generation now, because think about that. When was that first? It came out 77, didn't it? 1977. So we're talking about 41 years ago, yes?
Yes.
Okay, and so... you know, I was swept off my feet by it.
Oh, it was amazing.
And it was just incredible. And you know, wow, it was tremendous. And I think a lot of us now as parents may go back into the theater thinking about the great fun of George Lucas's wonderful new Star Wars saga and have never really stopped to ask ourselves those kind of questions. Never stopped to say, hey, is this some, you know, how does this compare with what we know of a biblical standard of reality and morals? So,
yeah.
So very good art, good music,
yeah,
good filming, special effects up to par and everything. But
mostly.
Okay.
Some of the science was a little bizarre, but you know, pretty good art and mixed message.
So proceed with caution.
Before we run out of time, let's talk about The Great Showman.
Now that to me is a great surprise. You know, because Darkest Hour is one of those you feel like I went to see the setting of a favorite book, and they got it right, and so you know that was something I just felt like, whew, oh great, love it. Greatest Showman, I went in with just about zero expectations, to be honest. In fact, I did not know that it was a musical. So I come to the theater, I sit down with my son John Calvin, and I went to see it. We sit down to watch this. And the very first, you know, the opening credits are this like Broadway style rollout, you know, overture type of thing. And I'm thinking, whoa, recalculate. This is a musical. Recalculating. Okay. So I was a little bit off balance there for the first, you know, several minutes of the film. But, okay. So what is it? Well, in quick synopsis, it is a, let's say, a fanciful recasting of the life of P.T. Barnum.
Okay.
And P.T. Barnum is one of those remarkable and very American characters of his era. He was a huckster. He was a hoax monger and an exploiter for entertainment and profit, and very open about it. And on the other hand, he was also a staunch abolitionist. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know
He was a staunch abolitionist before the big war. And was a great contributor to the early Republican Party and to the abolition movement, and that kind of plays into one of the interesting themes that plays out in this is that, you know, very much like Benjamin Franklin, who very famously said that you can do well by doing good. Well, Barnum was trying to feed his family, and he's trying to make a buck necessary to feed his family as well as to be rich one day, but. The way he did it was he put together a show featuring people with unique characteristics. And so, you know, the bearded lady, General Tom Thumb, the dwarf, all sorts of, you know, the Siamese twins, Chang and Ing, the all of these kind of characters, which have gone into history as just typical of Barnum's type of circus amusement, well, they come into the film. And what you see there, interestingly enough, is not just the idea, hey, I can get these really unusual people out on stage where folks will gawk at them and they'll pay me money to do it, but he's very loyal to them, and he gives them great respect, and he honors them. You know, he says, nobody becomes a success by being like everybody else. And, you know, there is an atmosphere of respect and of honor toward these people that society, I mean, even their own families have disowned them. And so that was a very interesting, maybe the major theme, as John Calvin put it in his review. Go out to our website, raisingrealmen.com, if you want to read these reviews. John says that's the major theme he pulls out of the film. It's a film about respect, not just Barnum's respect for these unusual people, but his desperate attempts to establish respect for himself, because he started from grinding poverty and orphanhood to rise to become this premier American showman. But he was always trying to prove himself. He was always trying to get other people to respect him. And that led him into some blind alleys. And without getting too much into spoilers, I got to say there's a couple of love stories that go on through the course of the film, and they really illustrate some very powerful themes about loyalty, about love that goes beyond the boundaries of prejudice and goes beyond the boundaries of snobbery and that kind of thing. There's some very challenging scenes in there where the main characters stumble, and also where some people successfully avoid trouble because they make the right choice at a critical moment. So I would say, to me, the message in this was totally surprising and quite good. I'd say it's got a good, strong, positive message.
Mm-hmm.
The art? Okay, the lyrics were written by the people who did La La Land. And frankly, I was very disappointed in La La Land. Don't want to get into a review. It was a postmodern musical, and less said about that.
I loved it to less like the last 7 minutes.
Yeah, but you know, that's a whole nother discussion. Yeah. But the same people wrote the lyrics for this one, and I tell you what, they're good. The productions are just huge, like you would expect a center ring circus kind of production to be. As I recall, there's not very much profanity. There's a fair amount of drinking. There are some scenes of violence, so it might be intense for younger viewers in that regard. And frankly, the people with their oddities and their deformities are kind of a little disturbing to watch sometimes. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, they're a little bit startling. But overall, the message was good. The production was just huge. I mean, it was great. Now, historically speaking, they're a little fast and loose, and I think Barnum would probably agree with it that the show is the thing. You want to entertain the people, and the fact that that what you see on the film looks more like 5 years when actually it covered more like 30 years, and a lot of things are folded in together that were separated by a decade or more. Okay, so don't take this film as a straight biography of Barnum. It's more like we're going to tell the story of Barnum, not the actual history of Barnum.
Wow.
So I don't know. I would say I'd give this one 2 thumbs up as well. I'd say it's got very good art, even though it's, you know, it is fanciful, and it's got very good, surprisingly good message running through it.
Awesome.
So you haven't seen that one yet?
No, I'm going to see it Thursday.
I think you'll enjoy it.
All right, guys. So okay. There's 4 movies you can go take your kids out to see, talk mm-hmm. about it,
mm-hmm.
but always talk about it, discuss it. Ask your kids, what's the message? What are they trying to get us to do? What are they trying? What message are they trying to impart to our hearts?
Yeah, and make that point to them. It's not the plot. Don't tell me the story again. Tell me what's the moral of the story? What is the message that they communicate that you take away and say, that's a good example of blank?
And then once you figure it out,
mm-hmm.
then ask yourself, how did they bring that message across? What did they do to make that message ring home?
Well, okay, and that's where you start to learn to appreciate the art.
Yes.
Okay, those are great things.
So, look, we're going to have good message. That's the goal.
So go to our show page at halandmelanie.com/radio. Mm-hmm. We're on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, but you can find it on that other link. And we have the links out there for these 3 reviews for Darkest Hour, Murder on the Orient Express, and The Greatest Showman. And hopefully, we'll have Last Jedi up in a few days, maybe. Also, there's a link to another another article we've got on our blog where we talk a little more detail about just how we put this biblical framework together when we look at the movies or listen to the radio or whatever. So come on out to our show page and get that information. And
now, let's give them a free download of our Media Proofing Your Kids message.
You know what? I think I'll do that.
Let's do it.
All right. So, yeah, come out there.
Come out to the show page, helenmelanie.com/radio.
Yes.
We'll give you a free download of our workshop on Media Proofing Your Kids. It'll teach you how to think through these things with your kids.
Okay. Yeah. So come out and look for that link as well. Look, we appreciate your participation here with us. We're glad to be back with you now and for looking forward to a big 2018. And we hope that you are as well. And we hope that you have made as your New Year's resolution to put everything under the lens of Scripture to make biblical family life a practical reality in your own home. So until next week, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And thanks for listening.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.